Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. Everybody, to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I am your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, my buddy, Mike McShane. Mike, how you doing, pal?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jonathan. I'm in baseball heaven. I got all four games of the divisional series going today, all at once. I mean, they're playing. This is awesome. I got all four of them going at once. This is tremendous.
For you, maybe. For others like me, absolutely not. Do we have a score on the Giants-Spreads game?
I've got it up on my screen here. I haven't seen their most recent score, but I know that St. Louis has already won their game. They won it 8-0. They are now leading in that series 2-1 and could potentially eliminate the Nationals, I believe, tomorrow. I believe that's tomorrow. I believe that game. So that makes for some interesting dynamic there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure
San Fran will be up in a moment. San Fran will be up in a moment. They're in a commercial.
And the Reds lead the series 2-1, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Correct. All right. Well, you know what? We got a big show ahead of us tonight, Mike. We have Glenn Daniel from WrestleChat.net who's going to be joining us to speak about two incidents that happened at a couple of WWE house shows this week.
Yep.
All while the WWE is heavily pushing their Be a Star anti-bullying campaign.
Yep.
So I'm sure a lot of people that are listening know what we're talking about already, but we'll get to that when Brett calls in a little later.
All right.
But before we start, we just want to send out our condolences. NFL great Alex Karras passed away today at the age of 77. He was a very sick man for quite a while, and unfortunately, he passed away. He was a dominant force for the Detroit Lions. And, I am one of the, many people actually believes he does deserve to be in the NFL Hall of Fame, but of course he's not. For some of our listeners listening today, if you don't know who Alex Karras is, you would probably know him better from the big screen, as he was Mongo in Blazing Saddles, and he was also George Papadopoulos in Webster.
Yep.
So he carved out a really nice career for himself after football, Mike.
Well, and he spent a couple of years there, 3 years with Monday Night Football, and that's really where I remember him mostly from. Sure, I mean, we all remember him in the, on the big screen. We remember him, comedic parts, I guess, what he really played. But I remember him. I remember him being an analyst, and I want to say that he came in after Dandy Don Meredith left Howard Cosell and what's the matter with me? It was Howard Cosell. Go ahead.
Alzheimer's?
Yeah, Alzheimer's, right. Yeah, that's who it was, right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was there for Gifford.
Gifford.
There you go, Gifford.
Yeah, yeah.
Frank Gifford. Yep.
Yeah. So, and that's where I recall him being from. And the interesting thing was I remember during those years, he had actually had an interview. He indicated that he looked at his role on Monday Night Football as being the bridge between Howard Cosell and Frank Gifford. So, obviously, there were some, there was probably some tensions. And you listen, if you read back to those old days of Monday Night Football – there were tensions. There were tensions.
Oh, yeah. So, well, I mean, we've seen it even in the recent, years of Monday Night Football.
So that's
Miller one?
That's where my recollection of Alex Karras is.
Yeah.
But four-time Pro Bowler. You can't take anything away from him.
No, not at all. He was a dominant force for the Detroit Lions, and man, did he sack a lot of people.
Yes.
Let me tell you. And he was a big guy, and, like I said, he carved out a really nice career for himself after football. I mean, he was in so many movies and TV shows. I mean, I remember him from MASH, from Webster, from, the movie Porky's that he was in. He was the Sheriff Wallace in Porky's. You know, so I mean, you know what? This is a, you know what? No matter what you say, this is a legendary football player passing away today. It's a big loss. Alex Karras was 77, and you know, our heartfelt condolences out to his family and friends, and you know.
Absolutely, and you know, really, when it comes right down to it, you know, one of the things that he's recognized for is that he was one of the first ones to look into that whole concept of creating a career after football. He was really one of the first ones that went into that whole multimedia venture after football.
Yeah,
he kind of blazed the trail for a lot of these guys that, you know, that we just kind of take for commonplace now. You know, if you're watching any of the NFL Sunday morning shows, you know, and you just kind of naturally expect you know, a whole bunch of these guys to go into broadcasting or go into media. And he was really one of the first ones to ever do that, if not the first one.
Yeah.
So he kind of blazed the trail for a lot of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Mike. Well, we actually have our guest on the line right now. And
yep.
Joining us is Brett Clendaniel from WrestleChat.net. Brett, how you doing, pal?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, Brett.
We're doing good, man. We're doing good. So let's jump right into it, actually. There was a couple incidents over the last I guess week and a half with the WWE, you know, the bigger one being CM Punk going into the stands, you know, basically a fan punching him to get his attention and slapping him on the back. And what does CM Punk do? He turned around and he nailed the wrong fan in the face, punched the guy in the face, shoved him. What's the latest with that? Is there going to be a lawsuit, Brett? And, you know, what's the vibe going on with wrestling fans right now in these couple of incidents with the WWE?
Well, it looks like at the moment, according to Laura Cole, she's the reporter out in Sacramento that's really been on top of this. It looks like that the innocent fan that got, you know, backhanded and or elbowed and then he got followed up with a punch or a shove, depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
Looks like he's come out and said that he's not going to do any sort of any further legal action. Looks like he's going to let
really?
It go.
Are you kidding?
Wow.
Are you kidding?
No, that's what he says right now. But, I mean, I'm inclined to believe that he probably got some kind of really sweet deal to not go any further with charges.
Brett, I saw the video on that. That looked pretty bad. I mean, this wasn't a slap in the face.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, and if you notice right behind him, there's a guy in a white T-shirt who was actually sitting right behind the gentleman that ends up getting hit. And he's punching CM Punk in the kidneys. And he pushes Punk right in the back of the head. You know, CM Punk doesn't notice it. Hits this innocent fan with an elbow and then a punch while he's trying to put his glasses on to leave. But he says that he's not going to do anything. And like I said, I really, really believe that he was given some kind of great deal by the WWE, whether it was some money, maybe some tickets, and a VIP trip to WrestleMania next year. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just speculating, but to be hit like that and then just say, yeah, I'm just going to let it go, there's definitely more to it. And I think a lot of it ties into two things. You know, one, they've been all over TMZ recently.
Yes.
You know, there was another situation over the weekend involving Alberto Del Rio, who is a WWE superstar. He at a local event, at a WWE Live event, a non-televised event, he was in the front row. He was wrestling Sheamus that night, and a mm-hmm. 8-year-old boy who was there with his mother, had a sign that was a pro Sheamus sign, and Alberto Del Rio took the kid's sign and ripped it up. And, you know, it's a common heel tactic that dates back probably to the beginning of wrestling. You know, you see a sign, you rip it up. Well, you know, the little boy cries. His mom goes all the way, who you know, has some connections because she was actually a reality TV show winner. She was on a show called Shark Tank, I believe.
Yes, yeah, she was.
And, you know, takes it all the way to TMZ and says her son was bullied and he cried the whole night all because his sign got ripped up. So I think with the CM Punk incident, you know, I really think this guy got some kind of really good sweetheart deal, you know, with them already in the news over that incident. You got Linda McMahon running for Senate. And, you know, the last thing you need is, you know, Linda McMahon's WWE champions out there punching fans in the face. You know, I think that ties into it as well. And then the third part of it that definitely ties into it is you got this whole be a star campaign. You know, the whole anti-bullying and don't hit people and take the higher road and stay calm under pressure. And here's your poster boy, your WWE champion, and he's out there back elbowing fans in the face for no reason.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask a question real quick, Brett. you know, and I'm not a wrestling follower, and I'm not a WWE follower. I know that it's commonplace for these guys to put on a show and to get the fans involved. When I saw the video of CM Punk, I mean he put a hit on that guy. When I saw that video, he was pretty high up in the stands. What was he doing all the way that far up into the stands?
Well, it was supposed to be it was something that they planned on doing. You know, they knew that this was going to happen, and what was supposed to happen was CM Punk just finished off this pretty much night-long feud with Vince McMahon, and, you know, he was going to leave the ring, he was going to go up into the crowd, and he was going to pretty much, the camera was going to zoom in on him and pan in while Vince McMahon made, you know, some kind of bold statement to CM Punk, which is what the show did. And CM Punk was told, you know, next week you need to tell me if at Hell in the Cell you want to face John Cena or you want to face Ryback. You know, both of them are guys right now in the storyline that CM Punk is running from, that he's trying to avoid. So how it was supposed to end was CM Punk was going to run away, essentially. He was going to run into the crowd, even though this crowd hates him because he's playing a bad guy. He wanted to be away from John Cena and Ryback so bad that he was going to even run into the crowd, which is, I guess, what we were supposed to get out of it.
Yeah.
WWE knew this was going to happen. And why? And since then, the WWE's come out with a statement, and CM Punk's apologized, the WWE's apologized, and the WWE has taken 100% of the blame for this, and they put it all around security. How in the world you book something like this with your heel champion, who is hated right now, and you have him run into the crowd with not one single security anywhere near him, is beyond me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Brett. You and me, we go back a long way. We're both wrestling fans. We've done a lot of things together in the wrestling world. And we all know, you know, on any given show, wrestlers are going to run into the audience. They're going to, you know, interact with the audience. It was something that was brought in not too long ago, actually. I mean, you could basically say probably ECW was one of the first that actually brought in that kind of fan interaction with wrestlers playing around in the stands. After this incident, do you think the WWE is going to lay off of that for a little while?
Yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing them do that anytime soon. Normally, you know, we've both seen this so many times, so many wrestling fans have. Normally, with the second people go into the audience, you have 4, 5, 6 security guards immediately will surround them, hold the fans back, you know, let
Absolutely.
Them do their little spot out in the crowd, and then they make their way back to the ring normally.
Yes.
I do not think you will see anybody empty out into the crowd anytime soon.
Did WWE release a separate statement about the issue with CM Punk? Because the one that I have up shows me the statement that they issued about Del Rio. And frankly, I don't think that their statement says all that much.
Yes, they have released a separate statement. The statement that I was referring to earlier was the one that they released for CM Punk. And in that statement, which I do not have right in front of me, they pretty much said that you know, that it was a planned spot, that it wasn't supposed to go like that. They pointed out that CM Punk was just playing a bad guy. They pointed out also that CM Punk was being taunted, that he was being pushed and shoved. Then they included CM Punk's apology in the statement, and then they mentioned at the very end that they took 100% of the blame for it, for not having the proper security in the correct spot.
Yeah, because, I mean, the one I'm looking at from the Del Rio one simply said, we apologize for any misunderstanding. And that was the one where apparently he ripped up the 8-year-old's sign. And I don't know whether that went far enough. However, I think that, Jonathan, if I'm not mistaken, I think the issue that you were looking at more was to the extent of how does this affect WWE's exposure, I guess, with their anti-bullying campaign, particularly in light of the fact you have so many young fans that follow this particular event. Let's put it that way.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's their, you know, biggest percentage of fans is these young fans.
Right.
Now, Brett, for years, wrestlers would take signs, tear it up. Like we said, it's a part of the whole fan interaction. But because they are pushing the whole Be a Star anti-bullying campaign so heavily for probably over a year now, if not more. I mean, you know, it was that a smart move by the WWE to let their wrestlers to continue to go into the stands and grab signs and rip them up? I mean, because, you know, if you look at it, it is kind of sort of a bully move.
You know, and you're right in a way. However, here's what I think about it. I think that the Be a Star campaign it's very well-intentioned, and I think it's been implemented very, very well so far. I think they've done a great job at putting it out there. And, you know, last year, when they initially launched this, I want to say around WrestleMania time, I put the press release on my website on WrestleChat.net.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to that press release right now, which I may have to post later, since then, so many people have found this press release via Google or whatever. And there are pages and pages. It's easily the most commented on story all time on WrestleChat.net. Just pages of parents saying, my son is being bullied at school. My daughter is being bullied at school. They look up to so-and-so's name.
Yes, I read them, actually.
How can we have people come out and maybe speak at the school? Or how can I get my kid help so that they know that they're not alone? Things like that. For that reason alone, I've seen firsthand that the Be a Star campaign is very successful and it's doing what it needs to do.
Yeah.
The problem here is we're kind of in a time where it's so, you know, politically correct, and people take what they see on TV and they think that there needs to be a direct correlation to what they're doing off of TV.
Mm.
And when it comes to ripping up signs, this has been going on since the beginning of wrestling, since the beginning of Bad Guys. I do not have any problem at all with what Alberto Del Rio did. It's
mm-hmm.
what happens. It's what a heel does.
Yes.
Was he bullied? No. It's ridiculous. You don't take your 8-year-old son to a wrestling show and expect, you know, a bad guy not to maybe give him a dirty look or to pretend like he's going to shake his hand and then pull his hand away at the last minute. It's wrestling. It's how wrestling began, and stuff like that can't stop now. Because if it stops, if those types of things stop, wrestling is going to stop. Wrestling is going to die, because then you're just going to have a bunch of good guys running around.
Well, you know, like I said, it's part of the whole fan interaction thing. I remember when I was a kid, one of my first fan interactions with a professional wrestler was Captain Lou Albano. And as a 7-year-old kid, you know, this 5'9", chubby-looking dude, he looked bigger than the world to me. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I'm sure the kid's going to cry. We've seen many kids cry. Ted DiBiase himself made kids cry. And the parents got a kick out of it. Why? Because it's something the kid is forever going to remember. Now,
wait a minute. No, hold on. Back up. I don't know. I don't know if you want to paint that brush. That's a tough one. Listen to me. Now, I'm coming off of 15 years in an educational environment, and I'm going to tell you right now that parents are ridiculously sensitive. All right. Now,
than years ago. I'm talking about, you know, 80s wrestling right now.
Okay, but not
this,
now.
And this,
not,
you know, this was a part of, you know, it was just beginning with the whole fan interaction thing, and it was huge. You know, now, I mean, you know, you grab a sign, and then all of a sudden the mother goes, you know, ape crap on people, and is.
Well,
you know,
exactly, and I think that's maybe where Brett's coming from. I mean, maybe there is some political correctness, whether we like it or not, gentlemen. Whether we like it or not. We have to recognize the society that we're living in today, and that society is hypersensitive.
Oh, absolutely. It's totally different.
So, I mean, I just know from being in a classroom where, you know, listen, I'm a sarcastic individual myself. And, you know, I would, you know, maybe say the wrong thing at the wrong time to the wrong student, and all of a sudden I'm getting flooded with emails and getting pulled into my administrator's office. Because, don't you know that so-and-so went home and they were crying their eyes out all night long because you said X, Y, and Z. Wait a minute, I meant nothing by it.
Yeah.
You know, so things can happen anymore that are completely taken out of context. You know,
which is where I was going to, where I was going to say that I think the mother of this kid went too far, you know.
And that's what I think, too.
Yeah,
if you're going to stop something like this, where do you draw the line? I mean, we still have wrestlers that get on the microphone and call the people in the crowd, you know, they're fat or they're ugly or they make fun of their sports teams. I mean, it's how a bad guy gets heat. It's how they get people to hate them. I mean, if they can't do those little things, you know, and Eric Gargiulo of Camel Clutch Blog, he's a good friend of me and John. He said this perfectly yesterday. He said, you know, if this is bullying, if what happened to this little 8-year-old kid is bullied, he says, well, then back in the late 80s, I was bullied as well when Ravishing Rick Rude told me and 16,000 other people to sit down, shut our fat butts up while he takes his robe off and plays his music. And it's true.
Yeah. All right. But then again, different time. Like Mike says, you know, people today, they're ultra sensitive. I mean, it's gone way over the peak than it used to be. And to me, it's too far, you know.
Right. And you know, with due respect, I'm older than both of you. And frankly, for me, it's difficult and was difficult at times to sit as an educator and say, oh, come on, will you please? You're being super sensitive. Because for God's sake, we've all been bullied. I was bullied more than, you know, probably more heinously than most today, all right, based on my age and just based upon the way society has addressed this issue. And you look at it as a rite of passage, bullying. You know, I understand we probably are using the phrase, the term, way too intermittently to mean other things.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is perhaps this particular event needs to be more cognizant of the messages that they're putting out socially by way of Be a Star and then what they're doing publicly on the stage.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Because there could be a perceived contradiction.
Well, I mean, that's, you know what, that's what I first thought of as well when I first seen it. I'm like, you know, whatever. It's a part of all that fan interaction, but if you're going to start pushing campaigns like Be a Star, you're going to have to do things a little bit differently. And what Alberto Del Rio did flew in years past wrestling, but unfortunately it's not going to fly now because it's going to give them nothing but negative press.
And
yeah.
I'm not saying that I'm in favor. You know, I'm not taking sides on either side of this issue. I'm just saying we have to recognize what society is today, and society may not be what we perceive it to be.
Which is why Brett and I, we think the mother went too far. But then,
right.
Like you said, it's an ultra sensitive society, and you know, Brett, my question for you is now that WWE is seeing this firsthand after being such big advocates for Be a Star. Do you think they're going to tell their wrestlers, listen, you can't really go after kids under a certain age anymore and rip up their signs?
I really don't know. It's so tough to say. I mean, because at that point, I mean, what are they going to say? Okay, the kid under 12 can't rip his sign off. Well, at that point, I mean, what are you doing? You carding people? Are you, you know, there's a fine line there. I mean, if you can't do it for one, you can't do it for any.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is an Alberto Del Rio or is a, you know, a primetime players, are they going to have to look at people and say, well, you know what, I think this guy looks like he's about 19 years old and he's holding up a sign. I know he won't cry. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. You know what we'll probably see? We'll probably see more plants in the audience. You know, hey, if you see this sign, it's going to be bright yellow and it's going to say this and this and this on it. Grab that sign out of his hands and rip it. You know, that's probably what we're going to end up seeing more of.
Along with
the acting.
Okay, but I'm going to point out, now I'm looking at the mission statement right from Be a Star. I'm looking at their mission statement right now. And it says that their anti-bullying curriculum was created by the NEA. That's National Education Association, one of the biggest union and lobby groups in the entire country. All right? Make no mistake, they are going to be politically motivated.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm sure they will be. Well, Brett, wasn't there another incident with Daniel Bryan ripping up a sign recently?
Yeah, there was an incident with that. I mean, recently the Be a Star campaign had quite a few things. I mean, Daniel Bryan had an incident. I think the one that probably made the most headlines prior to this would be Abraham Washington. And a few months ago, he made the rape joke, the Kobe Bryant rape joke on national TV.
Oh, yeah.
That was everywhere. I mean, he lost his job over that. You know, it's been everywhere. It's been everywhere.
Yeah. So, do you see anything coming out of this, or is it, or do you think it's just gonna, you know, go silently into the night like it usually does?
I think it's just gonna go silently away. I mean, the WWE yesterday, I pointed out on Twitter, it was almost eerily quiet. None of the wrestlers were talking about it. None of them were answering it. It was, I'm sure, an order came down from above and said, hey, you know, don't talk about this to the media. Don't answer tweets about it. CM Punk blatantly ignored it. And nobody said anything about it until the statement. Even after the statement, nobody said anything about it. You know, and none of the – they're very lucky because from what I understand and from what I've seen, none of the major media has put this up except for TMZ. TMZ did pick it up, I mean, if you consider them major media. But it hasn't been on – I haven't seen it on any news channels. I haven't heard any fan reports of them seeing it on the news channels. So it looks like aside from, you know, TMZ and Deadspin, it's pretty much like it never happened.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess that's pretty much it for that whole segment.
That's probably where it's going to go.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think it was well worth the conversation, because I think, Jonathan, you brought up a valid point that, you know, does it present, I'm not saying it does, but I'm saying, does it present a contradiction in philosophy? That's all.
Yeah. Well,
so it's a valid conversation.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens from it. If there's any outlash from it, I'm sure we can get Brett back on the air. How does that sound, Brett?
Absolutely, guys.
Sure. Brett, thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, we hope we can direct some traffic over to your site, because WrestleChat is a phenomenal site. It's one of the leading sources for wrestling news and rumors now. It's www.wrestlechat.net. Head on over there and tell Brett we sent you. Brett, thanks so much, pal.
Thank you, Brett.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
And you know, Jonathan, he did a great job on WrestleChat in covering this story. I mean, there were multiple posts
covering everything, thankfully, whether it's political or
particular issue. I mean, there were multiple posts up there. I mean, it was not an issue that they were afraid to move away from. They WrestleChat jumped in and covered the story it pretty much from the angle that you were addressing.
Well, that's the great thing about WrestleChat. They don't take sides, you know.
Right.
So there was a big thing going on recently with a foundation called Wrestlers Rescue, where they thought that they were harboring funds from other, sick and injured wrestlers and weren't giving them. And, you know, Brett and the guys over at WrestleChat, they did a phenomenal job with it. I thought they did the best job in covering that whole story and actually getting firsthand interviews from the people of Wrestlers Rescue and wrestlers that were affected by it. So, you know, honestly, if you're a big fan of wrestling, whether it's the WWE or TNA, head over to WrestleChat.net. You can also follow them on Twitter, at WrestleChatNet. Great stuff always going on over there.
Yep.
All right, well, let's move on over to the NFL, Mike. And it's week 6, and I think it's time we make our picks. What do you think? We have about a half an hour left in the show, so I think we should make our NFL picks.
All righty.
First game, Mike, Thursday night football.
Thursday night, tomorrow night, yep.
Pittsburgh Steelers at the Tennessee Titans. Who do you have?
Pittsburgh's a 5.5-point favorite at this point right now. Lay the points and take Pittsburgh. That's all I'm going to say on that one.
I got you there as well. I'm going with the Steelers, no matter if it's Jake Locker or Matt Hasselbeck. Titans aren't beating the Steelers.
Yep.
Cincinnati Bengals at the Cleveland Browns.
Interesting line. Cincinnati's only favored by one. I think that's showing a tremendous amount of respect to Cleveland, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that's showing a lot of respect to them. It might also be showing a little bit of weakness in the fact that some people aren't quite sure what Cincinnati is this year. I'm going to say lay the 1 point and take Cincinnati on this one.
I'm going to go with the Bengals as well, but it's showing that the Cleveland Browns are starting to click a little bit.
I agree.
So who knows? It's just 1 point right there in between them. I don't think the Bengals' offense or defense is dominant. Neither is the Cleveland Browns. It could really go both ways here, but
yeah.
I'm going to stick with the Bengals only because I think they're more well-polished than the Browns right now.
Absolutely. I think that's a good game, and I think that actually, believe it or not, it's a funny game. If you were to say, oh, listen, I can't wait to sit down and watch Cincinnati at Cleveland, some people might look at you like you're crazy, but I think that might actually turn out to be a pretty good game.
I think it might be. Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis-led Colts at the New York Jets. The Jets are a 3-point favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you have in this game?
Indianapolis is coming off of that incredible win last week over Green Bay. They won that 130-27. Your Jets, unfortunately, dude, I see the whole team just coming apart at the seams with each week as it goes by. The Jets are favored by 3. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm taking the upside. I'm taking Indianapolis.
Well, I'm going to go with the Jets only for one reason. If they play with fight like they did against the Houston Texans and do not give up, they can win this game. if they play like they have in weeks past, especially with the way they played against the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm not comparing the 49ers and the Colts because that's just two different sides of the ball, they're not going to win. Andrew Luck is going to tear them apart. But not a good running game for Indianapolis. I honestly think the Jets can take it to them in the air attack, which they did against Houston, and I'm definitely picking the Jets here.
Well, I would say unless this is a 3-0 game on the side of one side or the other.
Yeah.
Going into halftime, this should be another game, in my opinion, that might actually be entertaining to watch.
Well, who knows? Either it's going to be a clunker from both teams.
Exactly.
One team could be dominant, or it can actually be a high-scoring game, which would be fun to see from these two teams.
And that's right. That's what I'm saying. Unless it's a 3-point game going into overtime for one side or the other, it might be interesting to watch. So I put it on your list to peek in on every once in a while, for sure.
Absolutely. Kansas City Chiefs at the Tampa Bay Bucks. The Bucks are a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I'm truly just not sure why. I'm going to take KC in the upset on this one. I know they have not been a very good team, and I know that their fan base out there is just about ready to get rid of them. And
they're about ready to go out there and attack their own players and get them injured so they can cheer it.
You're not kidding. I think KC's got to show something this week, and I'm going to take a chance on them. I'm going to go with KC.
Okay. Well, I'm actually going to stick with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers only because I just like them right now. And, Tampa Bay, I think, has, some players that are a little bit better than what the Chiefs have, and hopefully they can put it together. They're playing at home. If they can stop the run, finally, Tampa Bay, I think it'll be good for them. So I'm taking Tampa Bay as the 3.5-point favorite.
Yep.
To me, no-brainer here, Oakland Raiders at the Atlanta Falcons.
I always get nervous with high lines, and this line is 8.5 in favor of Atlanta. But I'm going to tell you, and as much as I hate to admit it, I have a funny feeling Atlanta's going to go 6-0.
Yeah.
Take Atlanta with this game. They're Oakland's not beating them.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be, a zinger here. Atlanta's going to beat them. I think they're going to beat them in pretty good fashion. And I'm sure we can all look forward to
you
that.
You think they cover the line?
Yeah.
You think they cover the 8.5 spread?
Yeah, I think they will.
Okay.
Dallas Cowboys at the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore are 3.5-point favorites here.
Baltimore has not looked like the offensive group, in my opinion, in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That everybody was touting them as being.
But they still got a good defense, and they're 4-1 right now.
Yeah, and they're a 3.5-point favorite, and Dallas is coming off of a bye. So I'm going to tell you right now, I'm taking Dallas on this one. Dallas is going to beat the fraud offense of Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Baltimore on this one. I'm not a big fan of bye weeks. I've seen many teams bitten in the butt by it before. I think Baltimore is a little, still in game shape to go, even though, Dallas might be a little well-rested, but that might take them off their groove there or even put them on their groove. Who knows? But I think Ravens are going to win this one.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit Lions at the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles a 4.5-point favorite. I think that line's a little too high.
Line's been moving backwards since Monday. It actually opened up at 5.5. It's now at 4.5, and one would say that, you got to go with Detroit. I think it's going to be a close game. That's not unusual for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's the Philadelphia Eagles team at home. I'm picking the Eagles.
I'm taking the underdog Lions. All they need to do is protect Stafford, give him the time to throw, and if they get Javid Best back, going to be nothing but good stuff for the Lions there.
He hasn't done anything up to this point so far.
He's been injured.
I know that. I know that, but even earlier on he wasn't. And Matt Stafford has not looked like the Matt Stafford that we have seen all season long. I don't know what his problem is, but they better get it solved before Sunday if they hope to win the game.
Well, and the thing is, they don't need Javid Best to be a dominant running back and running. What he does is he opens up the play action for Detroit, and that's what they've
agreed.
Been.
Agreed.
St. Louis Rams at Miami. Miami's actually favored by 3.5 points, Mike.
Yeah, and Miami, I've been saying since probably week two that I think Miami is a better team than everybody gives them credit for. I think the line is interesting. I think it's showing a heck of a lot of, people have come down on St. Louis that badly? Really? Take Miami. That's where I'm going with it. Although I don't know if they're going to cover a 3.5-point spread.
I'm actually going to go with the St. Louis Rams. It's going to be tough trying to replace Danny Amendola because him and Bradford have a good connection together. But I still like the Rams' defense. James Laurinaitis is going to crush Ryan Tannehill.
Okay.
I see it happening. New England Patriots at the Seattle Seahawks, and New England is favored by 3.5. I think that might be a little low.
Yeah, really. The only thing I can think of here is that the guys setting the lines are looking at that Seattle defense. That's the only thing I can think of. 3.5. I don't know. I don't get it. Take New England. Lay the points. Take New England.
Yeah, I'm actually picking New England on this one, unless the Seattle Seahawks have some replacement roughs around. They ain't winning. Buffalo Bills at the Arizona Cardinals. Cardinals are a 4.5-point favorite.
I'm going out on a limb. Listen, I think Arizona's bubble has burst. Arizona 4.5. That's a joke. First of all, you're going to take Buffalo if you're going to play the line anyhow, because Arizona, even if they do win, will not cover a 4.5-point spread. Buffalo's a little better team than that. I'm taking Buffalo outright to win this game.
Taking the Cardinals only because Fitzpatrick, very prone to throwing interceptions, and the Cardinals' defense, they like to grab interceptions. I see Fitzpatrick not having a good game here. They're going to really need Fred Jackson to step it up coming back from injury, but I see the Cardinals winning this one at home. Who else we got here? We got the Minnesota Vikings at the Washington Redskins. Redskins are a 2-point favorite, Mike.
Yeah, and Minnesota. We're all sitting around scratching our heads, huh?
Yeah.
Where in the world did they come from? What are they doing? Minnesota won again last week, 30-7. Of course, it was against the Titans team.
Yeah.
Washington is favored by 2. RG3 has not looked very good. I didn't expect him to have the greatest of rookie seasons to begin with. I'm taking Minnesota.
Yep, I'm actually going with Minnesota here, too. RG3 coming off a mild concussion. Will he play? Won't he play? We'll see what happens. I got Minnesota. They look really good. Christian Ponder. Nice to see him off to a good start.
Yep.
Good game here, Mike. Defense versus defense. Good offense versus a decent offense. New York Giants at the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers, a 5-point favorite, which I think is way too high. It's going to be a good game.
I think it's a no-brainer. I'm taking San Fran. I'm going to be honest with you. I think this one's a no-brainer.
Okay. I'm actually
I think they might cover.
Yeah.
I think they might cover.
You think so?
I think they may, yeah.
Picking San Fran. Alex Smith looks totally different this year. Frank Gore is running like a beast. But the Giants still have Eli Manning. I think Hakeem Nicks is coming off the injured list to play this game, but I'm still going to go with the 49ers, but I don't think they're going to cover the spread. All right, Green Bay Packers at the Houston Texans. Texans are a 3.5-point favorite.
Well, as much as I would love to say that Green Bay could possibly win this game, I can't do it. As much as I would like to say the Texans would lose, I can't do it. Houston, surprisingly, has not had a loss, and they're not going to have a loss again this week. Lay the points, 3.5, and take Houston.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. Totally. I'm going with the Texans. I think Arian Foster is going to run it up past the 100-yard mark again. I think he's good for a couple of touchdowns this week. If he's on your fantasy team, make sure you start him.
Green Bay, I just don't know what's going on with them.
They're just falling apart at the seams.
Really. I really think that we are seeing a team right now that we're watching them almost slowly dissolve.
Well, you know what it looks like? It looks like that team is aging 2 years every game this season.
They do. I agree with you. It's a very, very strange sort of kind of metamorphosis that you're watching almost on a weekly basis with Green Bay. Because, again, this was another season where you come in and everybody's saying, well, okay, Green Bay, they're probably going to be one of the top five teams. And yet every week they look a little – not just a little bit less. They almost look exponentially less than they did the week before.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess we can both say that Packers are not winning this week.
Yeah. That's where I would go with it.
Okay, cool. All right, Monday Night Football time, Mike. Denver Broncos at the Chargers. Chargers are a 2-point favorite.
Yeah. Chargers lost last week. I'm looking at the Chargers, and I kind of put them in the same category as the Arizona Cardinals. I'm just not quite sure. You know, they're a home favorite with a 2-point line. Huh? Really? No. I'm going with Denver on this one.
Yep, I'm actually going with Denver here as well. As much as I like the Chargers and I like Phillip Rivers, I think Denver is going to have a nice offensive game here, and they're definitely going to take the win on Monday Night Football.
Well, historically, I've always liked the Chargers, historically. I mean, going back for years and years and years, but I'm not getting it, you know? I just don't get what's going on with them, so.
Yeah. Well, that's basically it for our Week 6 picks. Mike, who's got the lead right now in our Pick'em contest here?
Where do we stand at this current time? Okay, now let's see. Last week I was 12-2, and Jonathan, last week you were 9-5. So cumulatively right now, I got a one game lead on you.
Man, what's going on here, man? We always change at least one game.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look down the line here, I think when they say 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, like we're almost evenly splitting them. But let's see, I'm 46-31 and you are 45-32. So, yeah, you couldn't get much more even, or I guess perhaps maybe, as I've said before, much more mediocre.
Wow. All right, well, so far it's a really good contest between the both of us. We know our football.
I guess that's one way to look at it.
Well,
we know our football.
At least every week we at least know one game better than the other one. So.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, well, let's you know what? Before we get over to our baseball talk here, I just want to plug next Wednesday's show, which is, I believe, the 17th. We're going to have a very special guest on the show, Mike.
Exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Columbus Blue Jackets assistant coach and former Blues and Avalanche player Dan Hynote is going to be with us to speak about the lockout, to speak about the current state of the NHL, as well as the Blue Jackets roster after losing their big player, Rick Nash, to the New York Rangers.
Yeah, this is going to be, I mean, you know, this is, to me, this is exciting. We're actually going to have an assistant coach on here.
Well, the great thing about it is Dan has been through a couple of lockouts now. One is a player, one is a coach. We definitely want to see his perspective from both. And we'll be talking to Dan. The show will be at 12 p.m. noontime, October 17th, which is this Wednesday coming up. And probably around the quarter after 12 mark, Dan will be with us.
Yeah. Great work on your part, Jonathan, to get him on the show. That's terrific stuff. I'm thrilled. I can't wait to be talking to him.
As am I. You know, I'm big with the NHL, and I always liked Dan Hynote. Always thought he was a really solid role player for the teams he played on. And you know, it'll be an honor to have him on.
And with a guy whose name is Hynote to be playing for the Blues, I mean, it was just so appropriate.
It really was, wasn't it?
It was. You know, a Hynote on the Blues.
Hynote on the Blues. All right, well, let's get over to baseball. You know what? We're not going to talk MLB playoffs right now because we're going to wait till Friday show to really talk more MLB playoffs, I guess, Mike. But today, Pete Rose, a guy that both you and I want in the Baseball Hall of Fame, comes out and says, hey, Derek Jeter, you're not going to beat my hits record. Come on, man. You know, listen, Derek Jeter, he's almost 40. He is about 952 hits shy of Pete Rose's record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Pete Rose didn't come out and tell Jeter, hey, you're not going to beat it because you're a terrible ball player. You're just as good as me.
Right.
He came out and made some good points. He says, hey, listen, you're 38 years old. You play for the Yankees, a team that wants to win and a team that has got rid of players that were franchise favorites just so they can keep on winning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as he said, you know, are you going to be a 40-year-old shortstop for the New York Yankees? They're not going to put you at third base because of A-Rod. They're not going to put you at second base because of Cano. You're not going to help them out in left field. So where are you going to go? They're not going to put you at first base.
Right.
Now, Mike, do you see Derek Jeter getting another 952 hits over the next few seasons?
Well, no. I mean, all you have to do is do the simple math on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and let's get it straight. I mean, you know, hey, listen, Pete Rose might sound like he's, you know, a hayseed, but the bottom line is he's a smart guy.
Yes.
I mean, all you got to do is do the math.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not going to happen. And some people, I guess the folks out there that really, really don't like Pete Rose, or perhaps maybe have an axe to grind against him or whatever, are going to come out and say, oh, well, that's just Pete Rose being egotistical and arrogant as usual. You know, maybe there's New York fans up there, you know, who are going to want to discount him. But listen, that's been Pete Rose all of his career. He's always said whatever is on his mind.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with his comment.
No.
I think he's right on.
Well, you know what? We have to make sure we say this again. He did not call out Derek Jeter. He did not say Derek Jeter is a bad baseball player. He respects Derek Jeter, and he said Derek Jeter is a phenomenal hitter.
Mm-hmm.
What he's talking about here is age. Can Derek Jeter do it? Because he is the closest guy to the record. Can he get it? Can he get 200 hits when he's 39? Can he get another 200 when he's 40? Okay, let's say he can do it, Pete Rose said. When he gets up to 42, can he get another 200 hits at 42? He says, Derek Jeter is a great hitter, but let me tell you, I've been there. The body locks up.
Yeah.
I don't think he will, and even if he does all of that, he will still be 150 hits short of even tying Pete Rose's record.
Well, let me ask you a question, though, Jonathan.
Shoot.
And you're a Pete Rose fan, as I am.
Yes.
So, therefore, I mean, you followed him. You've seen him. You've experienced his personality and his egotism.
Yes.
And we have seen other players, and just recently we have seen other players, you know, former players who held records and they watched their own records fall.
Yeah.
Do you think Pete Rose would be as, what's the word I want, cordial in watching his own record fall to anyone in the future? I don't think he would.
I think he would.
I think that's Pete's nature.
I think he would be like, wow, you know what? Great job. You know what I mean? I'm sure he'll be like, oh, well, you know what? This is my only thing that I have left in the MLB because they're not letting me into the Hall of Fame for some ridiculous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he'll be upset. I think he'll be highly upset, and I think he deserves to be highly upset if he loses this record only because then Pete Rose is not a staple of the Major League Baseball anymore. What I think is that he'll say, okay, great stuff. You played great. But like I said, he's not calling anybody out here. He's not disrespecting anybody by saying this.
No, because he's done the math and he knows that mathematically it's probably not going to happen. But I'm just saying, let's just say for a moment that he lives long enough to see somebody come up that would be able to do it.
Yeah.
Do you think that he would be as – and frankly, I just don't think that's Pete Rose's nature.
Well,
Pete Rose –
like I said, if he
and I'm not saying
about it, I don't think it's going to be to the extent where he doesn't like the ball player, he doesn't respect the ball player. I think it's because he knows that the only thing that he has left in baseball is this record.
Well, I think you make a valid point there. Yes.
Yeah, and Pete Rose will never be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So now, if you will look at it, you'll say Derek Jeter is going to be in the Hall of Fame, no matter which way you look at it. If he leaves the game tomorrow, Derek Jeter is going to be in the Hall of Fame, and deservingly so.
Yes, he should, and I will not say never on Pete Rose.
Listen, it's going to take a lot for Pete Rose.
Rose will be in the Hall of Fame.
I've begged, I've pleaded, I've read, I've signed petitions. If the next commissioner that comes into Major League Baseball doesn't banish that rule and put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, it'll never happen, at least in our lifetimes.
Rush just got nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this week. I'm telling you, Pete Rose is going to get in there before I pass.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame, two of the most ridiculous things standing. Don't get me started on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Mike. I can probably do about a 15-hour show on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and how ridiculous they are. They are garbage.
We'll have to change the title of the show.
Rush should have been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame years ago. But we'll leave it at that.
God bless.
Because this isn't Rock and Roll Hall of Fame radio, and this isn't metal radio, this isn't rock radio, because, listen, I can go on and on about this. Don Summer,
yeah,
the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame before Rush? Give me a freaking break.
But there's always room to be bringing in other things. So if there's any Rush fans out there, you can give us a call at, what's our number?
2375373. But then again, we only have 10 minutes left, so go over to Fan Junkies at www.fanjunkies.net. What the hell? It's a sports site, but let's talk some Russian rock and roll.
Absolutely. But see, my point is, you know, the belief was that Rush was being excluded because of some political statements about the industry for so many years, and that they were being excluded because of that. And so therefore, I am not going to say never on Pete Rose.
Yeah,
You get rid of
Pete Rose gets into the Hall of Fame, Pete Rose will not be living to see it. And that's just, to me, whatever. It's not going to do anything. It's just going to be crap for them to do it while the guy is gone. You know what I mean?
Listen, we got to get rid of the commissioner before that ever happens. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. But let me ask you this, and you know what pisses me off about this, and you know what, call me out if I'm wrong here, but didn't they do the same thing to Ron Santo? They, you know, all these years not putting him in the Hall of Fame, then they put him in after he passes away? You know, to me,
I don't know. Are you saying that it was purposeful?
No, it's not purposeful, but I think that they should look at it, because if you see some of the players that get into Hall of Fames before the ones that are deservingly should be put in there, and then they do it a year after the person passes away, I think it's such a slap in the face to not only that person, but that person's family and what that person did for that game. I think it's a huge slap in the face, but I think it's for another show.
The circumstances, yeah, I would agree, it is for a different show, but the circumstances between the two situations are different. I think what's going to make the whole Pete Rose – hold on. I think the thing that's going to make the whole Pete Rose thing more of a lightning rod this year will be the fact that you're potentially going to be looking at somebody from the steroid era getting into the Hall of Fame this year while Pete Rose sits on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
And that's going to really be a lightning rod. And you wait and see the columnists that are going to be coming out and screaming and yelling and hollering about that.
Yeah, but you know what? People have been talking about that already. I mean, they've talked about it in the past.
Yeah,
if and when a Mark McGwire gets in, or if and when a Rafael Palmeiro gets in. Okay, so you can say that. You can cheat the game of baseball. You can lie to the game of baseball and the government. And you can lie to the kids that you were a role model for, but you could still be put in the Baseball Hall of Fame. But a guy who really didn't do anything wrong can't be put in.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're saying that we've talked about it. That's correct. Yes, we have talked about it.
Until it actually happens. In whole. I'm talking about articles I've read, books that I have read, whole steroid everything, and I'm pretty much up on it because that was something I followed from day one. It's just ridiculous. I'm sorry.
But I'm going to tell you something, Jonathan. When it finally does happen, not being talked about, not being surmised, not – oh, when this does happen, oh, what if this happens? Uh-uh. We're not talking about what ifs. I'm saying when it does happen, this coming, when it's all finished.
Done because Bud Selig and the Major League Baseball Association, they're going to have some stuff to pull out of their ass.
When it happens, that's when you're going to see the public outcry about Pete Rose not being there.
Listen,
when you're going to see it.
The people who have cared about Pete Rose since the 70s, have wanted to see him in the Hall of Fame since the 80s, and deservingly so, most of them aren't around no more.
I'm here.
Yeah, but you have no standing with the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, no, I don't. Not yet.
If you can get a ballot.
Not yet.
Then I'll give you some credit and some props there.
I got to be a baseball writer, right? Is that what I got to do?
I want to be a baseball writer. They're all a bunch of putzes. And every one of them.
Oh, you gotta love this stuff.
Oh, you always have to. All right, man. Let's move over to the next segment here real quick. We have a little over 6 minutes left in the show, so let's touch base on this real quick and try to keep it under because I want to get to the NBA segment here. Nationals, the players, they're pissed. Steven Strasburg is not off the roster. Is this why the Nationals are already behind?
Is it why? No, it's not why.
Well, an anonymous player told Fox Sports, if we had Strasburg, we'd be up 2-0.
No, I disagree with that completely.
Considering they're down, what, 2-1?
They are down 2-1, and yeah. They are looking at the potential. I believe their next game is tomorrow. I don't have the schedule directly in front of me at this moment.
Yeah, it is tomorrow. Okay. Yeah, it is tomorrow, I believe.
Okay. So they have the potential of losing tomorrow. Is it the reason why? Are they going to lose this series because Strasburg wasn't there? Boy, that's a tough question.
Well, to me, I think the Cardinals are just a better team.
But no, I don't think the Cardinals are a better team.
I think they're a better team only because they've been around each other for a while. They gelled, and I just think they're a better team. I'm sorry.
I think they're a more playoff-ready team. I'll put it that way. I don't think they're a better team.
They're a better team.
Okay. Well, we'll disagree on that one. Listen, yeah. I like the Cardinals. I'm rooting for them. Don't get me wrong. I do not want the National Women's.
Couldn't care less about anybody else.
Yeah, well, no, but I have my favorites in each of the series. but I mean, I'm rooting for the Cards on this one.
Yeah.
But if you're going to say to me, match up the Cardinals versus the Nationals, no, I think the Nationals are a better team right now.
Yeah.
I think they have a better starting rotation. I think they have a better bullpen. Would Strasburg have made a difference? Right now, the difference in the series is one loss. I don't know. Let's go. I mean, you'd have to go look at that game and say, well, if Strasburg were there, would it have mattered?
Let's go to the videotape.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But I think here's what I find interesting about the story you bring up. What I find interesting about the story is that you've got people inside the Nationals clubhouse.
Yeah.
That themselves are questioning the administration and the management of the team. And I think that that's important to remember. Because I think all of us as fans were sitting on the outside looking in, a lot of us anyhow, and saying, huh? What? What the hell are you doing? Why would you do that? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think that that's really the more important part of the story.
All right. Well, let's move it on because I think it's going to be a stale issue once Cardinals move on. For now, anyway, until more Nationals fans or even actual players, because the players were the anonymous ones calling out about it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope the Cardinals move on. I mean, that's what I want to see.
Yeah. Well, me too. Cardinals Orioles World Series. Come on, that'd be great.
Oh,
especially without Pujols would be awesome.
Ooh, I like that. That would make for a great 5 minutes at the Pratt House.
Birds versus birds.
That would make for a great 5 minutes at the Pratt House.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, let's move it over to basketball real quick. We have a little over 3 minutes left in the show, and something that we read earlier today that we were both intrigued about, and me being a basketball guy, I would really like to see how
intrigued
this would work.
I think it's more ha-ha. Go ahead.
I'm intrigued by it because I can't wait to see how he's going to do this. Sacramento Kings head coach Keith Smart, he's actually going to implement some plays from the 1943 Harlem Globetrotters into the Kings playbook. Now, Mike, we spoke about this. You said you can't wait to see them flipping the ball around their back through their legs, jumping over people's heads, but that's not going to be the case. What Keith Smart said, he said, I was looking at a video from 1943. The Harlem Globetrotters were playing over in Europe, and I got a chance to see, when you get beyond all of the theatrics that the Globetrotters did, they were technically in a situation where they were in a low post triangle action.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're going to see.
Yeah.
What you're not going to see is the Sacramento Kings making the Golden State Warriors or the Chicago Bulls look like the Washington Generals. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I'm really intrigued by this, Mike.
Well,
has anybody ever implemented Globetrotters plays into their playbook in the NBA? I'm sure they probably weren't open about this as Keith Smart is. But when you look at the roster, I mean, they got some guys that could really pull this off.
Well, I obviously it depends on the types of plays that you're talking about. And what you just described there might work well for the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
And God knows they got to do something. I mean, they're going to have to do something different. We know that. So to go back to a playbook from 70 years ago?
Yeah.
I guess might not be a bad move.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, obviously the funny ha-ha is when you hear Globetrotters, you're thinking, oh, okay, you're going to have, guys flying over people's heads and Meadowlark Lemon making a reappearance and things like that. Give it to them. I mean, if they're gonna rip plays from 1943, go for it. Go, let's see what happens.
Well, definitely see what happens. The
you
funny
got nothing
part
to
is
lose.
The funny part is Kelly Dwyer from Bull Don't Lie Yahoo Sports put up an awesome picture of one of my favorites, Curly Neal, with honorary Globetrotter Bernie Kopel from the Love Boat. Great stuff. Well, Mike, listen, unfortunately, we're running out of time. We have so many more things we would love to talk about, but we're going to have to move that over to Friday.
We'll do it on Friday.
So for Mike McShane and Jonathan Ragus, I just want to thank all of our amazing listeners from Fan Junkies Radio and also our special guest, Brecklin Daniel from WrestleChat.net, for joining us. And we'll see everybody on Friday.
See you then.
See you then, everybody.